How often do you write now? Do you write emails every day, send texts, or are you a good old-fashioned letter writer? Do you think about how you write? Is it right, the spelling, punctuation, and does it make sense? Do you read through what you've written, or do you send it off without checking? Today, I'm with a best-selling author, Caroline Taggart, who does care about grammar and punctuation. She's written The Accidental Apostrophe, and she's come to Radio Gorgeous today to talk about it. Hi, Caroline. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Radio Gorgeous. So, why is punctuation so important?
Punctuation is important, I think, for three reasons. One, it's about how you present yourself. I always say that writing with decent grammar, decent punctuation, is as much a part of you as how you dress, how you present yourself. If you write something, and I'm talking in a formal context, if you were writing an essay or an application or a report for work or something like that, you want to present yourself as well as possible. And writing accurately is one way you do that. Secondly, there are ways in which punctuation genuinely changes meaning. And what I discovered more and more as I was researching this book is that you can have an awful lot of fun with punctuation. You can change meaning, you can change nuance. Because, of course, when you're talking to somebody, when you're there face to face, you smile or you frown or you shrug your shoulders, you use body language, you use tone of voice. If the worst comes to the worst, you can say, oh, you know what I mean. Now, you can't do any of that when you've put something on paper or on screen and the person you're talking to is not in the room. And punctuation helps you enormously there.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah. It's my birthday. Statement of fact. It's my birthday with an exclamation mark. That's why I'm drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, so The Accidental Apostrophe. Can you tell us about the title and what that means?
Well, it's one of the notorious things that people who care about punctuation are always on about. The way you go round a market stall, a greengrocer's stall particularly, and you see things like bananas and avocados with an apostrophe before the S. Because one of the things that has got into the heads of people who haven't been taught to use apostrophes correctly is, for some reason, that if a word ends in a vowel and you make it into a plural, you put an apostrophe. Now, that, frankly, is nonsense, but it's very, very commonplace. And, you know, that's not an accidental apostrophe, it's a misplaced apostrophe, but accidental apostrophe just tripped off the tongue rather better.
OK, so Radio Gorgeous ends with an S. So if I'm saying Radio Gorgeouses, would I put the comma after the S?
Not a comma, an apostrophe.
I mean apostrophe. Would I put it after the S for a plural?
Well, you probably wouldn't be saying Radio Gorgeous is plural, would you? What you might be doing is saying Radio Gorgeous's way of life, Radio Gorgeous's ethos, something like that. So you'd be using it as a possessive. And then you would put an apostrophe after Gorgeous and then possibly an S as well. But it's an interesting...
What? So I could have another S?
Oh, yes, you have S apostrophe S. If you were talking about St James's Park, for example, in London, that's S apostrophe S.
See, my husband's called James, so I've always thought it was the apostrophe was just on top of the S afterwards. That means James's.
Well, opinions vary. And actually, St James's Park is a very good example because there are three St James or St James's Parks in England. There's one in Exeter and there's one in Newcastle, both football grounds. And one of them spells it just St. James, like the name, with no punctuation. One is St. James's with an apostrophe, but no extra S. And as I say, the London one is James's with S apostrophe S. And you think, why? And that's why people get so confused. There's no answer to that. It's like, why does Harrods not have an apostrophe in it? Because Harrods says it doesn't. It's as simple as that. If you're looking at something that's a proper name or a brand name, you spell it the way they spell it.
OK, can you think of any brand name with an apostrophe in it?
Well, Waterstones the Bookshop notoriously dropped theirs recently because Waterstones was founded by a man called Tim Waterstone. So something that belonged to him was Waterstones apostrophe S, belonging to Mr. Waterstone. And then he's no longer involved in the chain, and people thought, particularly with punctuation, is apparently very difficult for things like online ordering.
Yeah.
And sat-navs. Sat-navs apparently get confused by it. Mm-hmm. So they just thought, oh, it's easier if we drop it.
Yeah. No, I can see that, because also just writing it and everything, it's just cleaner, isn't it, without the apostrophe. In fact, that's what I want to say. I think the rise of Twitter has made my punctuation so much worse, because I've only got X amount of letters. I miss out commas now because of it. Just, and then I use things like capitals or put something in bold to make a point. You know what I mean? It's like I've sort of created my own way of writing.
And I think Twitter in particular, because of its character restrictions, has done that. But of course, text messages are the same, because, you know, you watch young people who are really, really good doing it with their thumbs, but I find it very cumbersome. And sending a text is something I do slowly. So it's easy to see why people want to find different ways around it. And I think that's absolutely fine.
You know, because language can evolve.
Of course it does. By definition, language evolves. As long as there are people alive to speak it and write it, it's going to change. But if somebody sends you a text that says, have you heard so-and-so's just got engaged, and you know they've been going out together for 7 years, and you send back a text that just says !!!! which means, wow, no, I hadn't heard, that's amazing, and says it much more briefly, no problem with that at all. No problem with little smiley faces and other emoticons and emojis in their place. But as I say, when you're doing something formal, you want to do it more formally.
How can grammar help us write, though? How can it help us with the words?
Sorry, I don't know what you mean.
So save as a sentence. So how does putting commas, full stops, how does that really make the sentence alive, you know?
Well, as I say, the business of putting in an exclamation mark to make it obvious that you're making an exclamation. Mm-hmm. Whereas people use exclamations for silly reasons. You know, I've seen, your chicken will be tastier if you let it rest after you've taken it out of the oven. That's not an exclamation mark. What's the point?
Statement.
Yes. Mm. And then you see Stonehenge is 5,000 years old. And I think, I know Stonehenge is old. Don't rub my nose in it,
Yeah.
Elvis Presley had however many hits he had, !!!! I know Elvis was successful. I was alive when Elvis was alive.
So when would you use an exclamation mark?
Look out! Don't touch that! It's hot! Be careful! How wonderful! What good news! Something that you are genuinely exclaiming about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think it's quite important... quite important. I think it's quite important, because if you exclaim about something that's not an exclamation, what do you do when it is an exclamation? You debase something by overusing it.
Mm-hmm. No, I really agree with that. Now, I have written something, and I'm going to get a pen for you now, and I want you to look at it, because I've just wrote it really without thinking much, you know. And I want you to see the grammar in it, because there isn't much grammar in it. And I'm wondering whether I've done it wrong. Okay, if you just look at this. I'll just read it out, what it says, okay? Lynn Frank's Power of Seven with Josephine Pembroke. Gorgeous lives on Radio Gorgeous. Visionary and facilitator for women globally, Lynn Franks talks to Josephine about her latest venture, Power of Seven, full stop. Now based in Somerset, Lynn invites us to her party, expect dancing, yoga, well-being and healthy food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I think that you could do with quite a few more commas in there.
Ah.
Visionary and facilitator for women globally, comma.
Okay.
Lynn Franks talks to Josephine about her latest venture, possibly, comma, mm-hmm. Power of Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Now based in Somerset, comma, Lynn invites us all to her party. And then... I would put either a full stop or, if I was being really radical, I could put a semicolon there. Lynn invites us all to her party. Expect dancing, yoga, well-being and healthy food. And that's because those ideas are closely connected. It wouldn't be wrong to put a full stop there. Lynn invites us all to her party. Full stop. Expect dancing, yoga, well-being and healthy food. But you might think that was a bit jerky, a bit abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And a semicolon there shows you that it's all still part of the same idea, that the dancing, the yoga, the well-being and the healthy food are part of the party.
Okay. So is this a typical sort of thing that you'd see written? Is this the sort of thing that you think, oh gosh, where are the commas?
Yes. Yeah, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Mm. And I think if you read it out loud...
Yes, you, when we read it out loud, it didn't make sense because it was women globally Lynn Franks. That indeed. Didn't make sense. Yeah.
Visionary and facilitator for women, comma, globally Lynn Franks. That's just plain wrong, yeah. isn't it? Because yeah. the globally goes with that bit.
Yeah.
And then, as I say, you can change meaning. For example, I pulled up all the weeds which were growing in the lawn means the weeds were growing in the lawn and I pulled them up. But I pulled up all the weeds which were growing in the lawn. If you put a comma after weeds, that makes it into a by the way. Mm-hmm. It's a different mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you can use commas or a pair of, yes, a comma or a pair of commas often to show that what you're putting between the commas is by the way, just for interest, as opposed to an intrinsic part of the sentence. And again, you can just subtly change the meaning.
So do you think reading aloud's quite a good thing to do?
Yes. If in doubt about where to put a comma, read it out loud and think, am I sort of pausing for breath here? And if you are, then that's probably a good reason for putting in a comma.
Okay, I'd now want to say that quite a lot of people send emails without, on text, without reading them through before they send. What do you think of that?
I think it's quite dangerous because for some reason, when we were writing letters, you know, back in the day when you were handwriting or typing letters and posting them, we seem to have taken more care over them. And everything electronic is so much quicker that we tend not to. So the language that we use in an email, even, never mind a text or a tweet, tends to be a bit more abrupt, and it's very easy to be offensive mm-hmm. by accident.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is why, of course, we have things like smiley faces to show that we're joking. If we say something that, taken at face value, could be misinterpreted. But I think it's quite important, particularly if you're writing to somebody that you don't know very well, or it's a business thing, or it's important to get your meaning across, just read it and make sure that you have said what you mean and that they are going to know that you've said what you mean.
See, I'm quite traditional because when I write to someone, I feel like I can't go straight into the sentence without saying, how are you? Or I hope you're well. I hope all's well. You know, I just have to do that because I'm, again, Caroline, I'm scared of the abruptness, like you're saying.
Most of us do that, I think. I start emails to people. I say, hi, Josephine, hope you're well, and could you do me this favour, or whatever. Mm. Because I think just writing to somebody and saying, could you do me this favour, is a bit abrupt. Mm. But that's more a matter of etiquette than it is of grammar or of punctuation. It's just a way of adapting this rather terse style that we all use now to make it less terse and less likely to offend.
But in a way, it's all linked, isn't it? Because it's certainly. All culture, isn't it?
It's really? all culture. It's all linked. Mm. And it's all part of trying not to offend somebody unless you're actually meaning to offend them.
Yes. Now, the awful thing also is we do write that email and press send and regret it. I mean, oh.
Yes.
Yeah, that can be a problem, can't it? Yeah.
Yes, and that's, again, we're talking etiquette rather than anything else, but if you're angry about something or upset about something, or if you're the slightest bit drunk, draft it, put it in the draft box, look at it again in the morning, rewrite it, because you'll almost certainly want to rewrite it, and then and only then send it.
And also, don't put their name in the top, you know, because you can so easily press send by mistake. If you just, you could even put your name on the, you know, on the kind of name of the email it's
yes.
going to.
So if it's not addressed to anybody, it can't go to the wrong person.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting the way things have changed. But surely there are all these rules, but rules must be there to be broken sometimes, Caroline.
Oh, yes. And if you're a fan of James Joyce, to... you know, name probably the most notorious and famous of them.
What do you mean, of them?
Of people who break the rules. of great authors who have broken the rules. James Joyce didn't approve of what he called perverted commas, what most of the rest of us call quotation marks or inverted commas.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't use them in dialogue.
That's why it's like stream of consciousness as opposed to knowing what's going on with each person.
There's an element of that. Mm. And the famous monologue, Molly Bloom's monologue at the end of Ulysses, goes on for something extraordinary, like 67 pages. And I think I'm right in saying there isn't a comma in it. But then that's deliberate. You know, he's not ignoring the rules. He's deliberately breaking the rules because that's what he wants to do. I mean, quite recently, 2 or 3 years ago, Will Self published a novel that sort of begins in the middle of a sentence, and the whole book is one paragraph. It's got lots of dashes, and if I remember rightly, it's got ellipses, dot, 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 and things like that that help you out. But it's as much as anything, obviously, as far as the author's concerned, an experiment with style. Can I make this work?
The thing is also, they are literary people, so at least they've got the knowledge first to break it. So
precisely. Precisely.
Yeah.
But there's no getting away from it, that if you're a novelist or a writer of any kind, it may be a literary and intellectual exercise. It may be a work of genius, but it doesn't make it any easier to read. Mm-hmm. And I think for most of us, making something easy to read is a courtesy to the people we're writing to, and also means they're more likely to understand it.
Okay, well, let's kind of analyse a bit, you know, the things. Let's talk about full stops, because my partner says I really don't use full stops enough. He loves them. He honestly loves them.
Well, a full stop comes at the end of a sentence. So it shows the end of an idea, the end of a statement. Whereas in this piece we were talking about before, about Lynn Frank's, you had something that could have been a full stop, could have been a semicolon. You had two connected ideas, so it wasn't necessary to break them. But what a lot of people do is put in commas where they should put full stops. They just sort of keep running along. And a rule of thumb, let's see. If a sentence has gone on for more than 2 or 3 lines without something like a semicolon in it, it might be worth going back and looking at it and thinking, should I break this up? Would it make more sense if I broke this in two?
Yes, I suppose it's actually a case of making sense of full stops, isn't it? Mm. Okay, what about commas? Now, I know we've talked a lot about them, but can you go into more depth about commas?
Well, commas are mini pauses in a sentence. So they separate a group of words that are connected with the idea, they're connected with the finite verb. I don't want to get into too many technicalities here, but they put... You can have a sentence that has several elements, several groups of words in it, and a comma might separate one from another. As we were saying about the Lynn Franks thing. What was the word? Globally, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you put the comma in the wrong place, you change the meaning.
Visionary and facilitator for women globally, Lynn Franks talks.
Visionary and facilitator for women globally goes together. That describes who and what Lynn Franks is. So putting a comma after that just keeps those words separate from the rest of the sentence.
Excellent. What else have I got on my list? Brackets, because again, brackets there's an argument for when do you put the full stop after a bracket, but also, first of all, can you just tell us when to use brackets?
Well, brackets, again, separate something out from the rest of a sentence. And you have a thing called bracketing commas, where you use a comma before and after a set of words. And you could equally, grammatically, put parentheses round them. But it's a stronger break. It's more, you know, the comma's a tiny little thing and brackets are quite big. So it is as simple as that. It's the effect it has on your eye, if you like. You can see that that's quite a big and important break.
And could it also be slightly like saying it's like sort of NB, it's sort of on the side, it's sort of, and this is another thought internally?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's another point, but it's not the main point.
Exactly. Mm. And you have it as asides. For example, if you were writing something historical and you wanted to give somebody's date, you know, the dates of a king's reign or something of that sort, you'd put brackets round it.
Yeah, because people want to know that information, but it's just not to be kind of read out.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not grammatically part of the rest of the sentence.
Mm. And then what about the full stop, inside the bracket or outside?
Oh, let's think of an example here. If the bit inside the bracket is not a complete sentence, then the full stop comes afterwards.
Mm.
So the bracket is inside the sentence, whatever it may be doing grammatically, it's inside the sentence and the full stop comes after it.
Fantastic. You've solved it for me. This has been a big question for years. Okay, so, punctuation marks, that's, well, yeah. I mean, no, as in, sorry, I mean as in exclamation marks.
Well, exclamation marks, we talked about. Exclamation marks and question marks,
yeah.
I think,
yeah,
are worth...
question marks as
they're
well.
They're worth mentioning because one of the things that people are often confused about is what you call an indirect question or, if you like, an indirect exclamation as well. So if I say, it's my birthday, with an exclamation mark, but you report it to somebody and say, she said it was her birthday, there's no exclamation about that, so you don't put it in. Are you coming to the party? Question mark. She asked if I was coming to the party. That's a statement. It's not a question.
And then there also just the design. I remember learning about question marks that it used to be a Q, didn't it? It used to be a Q in Latin, and then they dropped it and the design is that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, I was taught that at school.
What I love, what I think could be really useful if we adopted it in this in English, is the Spanish habit of putting an upside down question mark or an upside down exclamation mark at the beginning of a sentence. So you know from the word go that however long this sentence is, it's a question.
Brilliant.
I love it. I think everybody should do that.
Exactly. Well, maybe. Next time I read your book, there'll be lots in there. Okay. What about dashes?
Dashes are another form of pause. They're a bit like a colon or a semicolon, but they're, or indeed like a bracket if you use two of them, but they're more informal.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't overuse them because it just looks messy. But also they're casual and they're fine in casual speak. They'd be fine in a sentence like the one I'm speaking at the moment because I'm pausing and looking for my words, and you might put a dash sometimes when I pause to show that, you know, just to slow it down.
Mm.
But that it's brackets and dashes, I think, are things that it's very easy to overuse.
Mm. Yeah, people can get addicted to them,
yeah.
Can't they?
Yeah.
Now, you said a really interesting word, because I dot, 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 dot. You
ellipsis.
Said there was a... Oh, you see, I've learned something new today. Ellipsis. Is that a Greek word?
Yes, I should think so. Mm. Sounds it, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it does, because it's got iss on it, yeah.
But it's just...
So what is the expression, though, that we would say dot, 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 or do we have to say ellipsis?
Well, no, lots of us say dot, dot, dot. Yeah. Normally it's three dots.
Yeah.
And again, that's... to show that there's a break or to show that you've been interrupted. You know, I'd really love to talk to him, but I just don't think I... You might go dot, 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 because what you mean is, I don't think I can bear it. You've not been able to finish the sentence because you're going to burst into tears, that sort of thing. And of course, there's the famous bit in Mamma Mia where the daughter has found the mother's diary and they had, you know, she'd been off on this island with all these boys and think, dot, 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 which is obviously saying, we had sex, but we're not going to say so.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a way of sort of keeping a secret, keeping people thinking, keeping you alert, but it can't be ended. Yeah.
Yes. It shows that in some way there's been an interruption, because if there hadn't been, you'd just put a single full stop.
So tell us about you, Caroline. What was your journey? How did you get to being this woman that is writing all these grammar books?
Like so many good things in life, it happened completely by accident. I have been an editor. I edit other people's work, books, for nearly 40 years now. And about 10 years ago, I was talking to a friend who works for Michael O'Mara, the company who publishes this book, and she said, you know, you'd be really good at doing the sort of books that we do, and you'd be good at talking about them on the radio. And she was the publicist, so she was interested in getting people who could talk on the radio. Shall I suggest to them that you could write a book for us? And so I said yes, went away and forgot all about it. And then 3 months later, somebody got in touch and said, would you like to do this for us? And so I did, and one thing led to another.
What book was that, the first one?
The very first one was called I Used to Know That, and its subtitle was stuff you forgot from school. And I'd written it as a sort of frivolous loo book, you know, to dip in and out of. And it was about Pythagoras's theorem and the Battle of Hastings and, you know, the plot summary of Macbeth and all sorts of other things that you might have done for GCSE years ago. And I thought it was just going to be quite fun. But the publishers, knowing better than I did, published it round about exam time. And it became something that...
I don't believe.
Yeah, I kid you not. People, parents, found it helpful for helping their kids with their homework.
That's amazing, because I honestly thought, you know, I mean, I can't believe it literally became a useful tool. For,
yes, something that I'd written just for fun became a very useful tool. And I'll tell you a very funny thing about publicising that, that I did a lot of radio programmes and lots of people wanted to talk about the things that they had hated at school. Almost everybody wanted to talk about Pythagoras's theorem and said, you know, we did that 30 years ago and didn't understand it then, don't understand it now. What is it? Nobody wanted to talk about the nice bits, you know, the seven wonders of the world or the books that they'd studied or anything like that. Everybody wanted the things that they'd hated.
The thing I loved about Pi was you looked up the answer. That's why it's the only maths I could do. Why should we buy the accidental apostrophe? Who is it for?
I think as much as anything, it's for people who are just the sort of people who get uptight when they see an apostrophe in the wrong place, the sort of people who get cross when they pass the greengrocer's stall and see an apostrophe in tomatoes. I hope they would find it entertaining. But I also hope that it's mildly useful for people who... There's a whole generation who were simply not taught English grammar because there was the idea that you didn't have to be taught your own language. So people have missed out on the formalities. And a lot of people are quite nervous about putting pen to paper in a serious way. You know, right? Somebody who's now in a middle management role and has to write a report and hasn't written an essay since they were 15, they find that sort of thing quite nerve-wracking, and I hope it might be helpful.
I'm definitely going to read it because I know I need it. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous, Caroline. The Accidental Apostrophe is published by Michael O'Mara Books and is out now. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
For even more amazing women, go to radiogorgeous.com.